listening to On the Air. And believe it or not, I have a crowd in here. There are people that like me. It's hard to, well, I'm not sure they do. They just showed up. But we have Fred Malone from the Historical Society on camera three. We have James Anderson on camera four. And hi, guys.
Hello.
Good morning, Glenn.
And we're going to be talking about southeastern Ohio. And one of the things, well, we are all from that area. I mean, I spent 12 years down there, and James, I know, was down there for school, and Fred's from the Logan area, so he knows all about down there.
And Scioto County, remember? I was born in Scioto County.
Yeah, well, I don't want to give them too much credit.
Well, that's still southeastern Ohio.
It is, yeah. Well, anyway, what are we going to talk? I told the guys when they showed up, I said, you guys always plan stuff, and they looked at me like I was an idiot. So I guess this is unplanned. We're going to just talk about it for 2 hours.
Well, before we start our conversation about southeastern Ohio and all of that beautiful area down there, what I call Appalachia.
Yeah.
I did want to mention a couple of things about the museum. We just had our Marion County Historical Society. We just had our annual meeting this past Tuesday. We are closed for the season now. However, I always like to have a caveat to that. If you are interested in book gifts for anyone in your family, especially if you've got people coming in from out of town for the holidays, we have some really great books at the museum in our gift shop. All about Marion history and you know, Marion in general.
Anything about Spider-Man?
No, nothing about Spider-Man.
My kids won't be there.
we have things about Jim Thorpe.
Okay.
Yeah, the Oorang Indians.
Yeah.
But if you are interested in that, even though the museum is closed, if you stop at the museum between 9 and 4, Monday through Friday, and go to the State Street side, ring the bell, one of the girls will come to the door and be glad to sell you any book that you would like or books
cool.
that you would like. We have several books that Kensel Clutter wrote. We have books that Terrell Romine wrote. Of course, Randy Wendland has written a number of books, just wrote a new one here about a year or so ago about Crystal Lake. So a lot of great things there that are available for sales, and we never turn a sale down.
And Christmas is right around the corner.
Christmas is right around the corner. Ordinarily, I would say you can go to our website, marionhistory.com, and order things online. However, with this late stage, with the post office, if you're interested for something that you want to give as a gift for Christmas, stop down at the museum and pick it up now, because we will make those available for you, even though we're closed. Mm-hmm. The other thing I wanted to mention, a lot is going to happen at the Heritage Hall while we are closed over the winter, and we normally are closed fully December, January, February, and most of March. We do open on weekends in March. This year that may change. We may stay closed the entire month of March. However, I'll have a caveat to that here in a minute. But a lot's going to be going on at Heritage Hall, because we are receiving, in addition to Heritage Hall, which is the history of Marion County, we have the Wind-Up Popcorn Museum.
Mm-hmm.
We will and have received, and will hopefully have available when we open in at least April the 1st, the Buckeye Telephone Museum is now going to be located at Heritage Hall.
Cool.
Which used
that's
to be out on
new.
Del Fountain yeah. Avenue. We are going to have Sherry Williamson's Elves. That museum will be located now at Heritage Hall after the first of the year, or when we open in April. And, of course, the big news, as far as I'm concerned, is the Mary Ellen Withrow Museum will be located at Heritage Hall starting next year. So when you come to Heritage Hall in 2022, you will actually get five museums for the price of one.
Really?
So, yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah.
So that'll be fun.
We're pretty excited about it. It is going to, of course, entail a lot of redirecting of things, you know, in the museum. So you probably won't, if you are a regular and come often, you probably won't recognize things that used to be where now new things will be.
Mm-hmm.
The what we used to call the military room will now become the Buckeye Telephone Museum. And we're going to be putting Mary Ellen's Museum in what used to be our curator or our archivist room downstairs. We're going to be putting all new cases in there, and of course we'll have a big grand opening for that. And then the Woodland Elves will be kind of located in different places around the museum. Our idea is to have, when kids come, they'll be given a sheet, and it will be their objective to locate
the elves,
find the woodland elves.
Like,
so it'll be like a scavenger hunt for the kids.
Yeah,
so
awesome.
I think that's going to really hopefully increase the flow through Heritage Hall, and it'll also give people a chance to see these things that normally would not have been open on a regular basis. The Telfer Museum was kind of a hit-miss thing. They usually did that on a weekend, but their volunteers were unfortunately dying off, and so it made perfect sense for us to take it over. And, of course, with Mary Ellen, with her museum out at Primrose, you know, that was only available normally by appointment or certain days that she would have it open. Now it's going to be available basically all the time.
Have you decided where you're going to put James Anderson Naturalist Museum?
Well, you know, that's funny.
I love the
My intention, we're going to be kicking off, and I'll make this formal announcement, we're going to be kicking off a huge capital campaign at the beginning of 2022. And
you're
going
to have to.
This has been in the planning for some time. We have some HVAC issues that need to be addressed. We have 11 or 12 heat pumps in the museum, in addition to a new boiler. We put a new boiler in about 5 years ago, which is a basic source of heat for the original building.
Mm-hmm.
When they added onto the building a number of years ago, when the post office was still there, they put heat pumps on the roof. So we have, I think, 6 heat pumps on the roof and 4 on the ground.
Wow. That's
and a lot. All of them have exceeded their 20-year lifespan. So over the years, we've had to do a lot of work on them. We did put 2 new heat pumps in over the office areas about 4 years ago, but we still have at least, I want to say, 6 or 7 of those heat pumps that are way past the 20-year capacity, and even the ones that are on the lower level down in our well area, those are either close to 20 or over 20. So that's probably a $250,000 project right there just to replace all those. In addition to that, Heritage Hall has its original roof on it, and that's a tile roof. And over the years, we've replaced tile as needed, and we do not want to change the roof. We want to maintain the original roof. However, that's probably going to be a $500,000 project by itself right there. So it's our goal to try to raise $1 million through private donations, through corporate donations, you know, whatever. So that's going to be kicking off here in January, and you'll be hearing more about that when that comes by. So
I'm sure you and I will be talking about
it. Oh, yeah, definitely. But my what I was getting at was there is a third floor in the museum. There's basically a basement floor and a main floor.
We can put snakes and rabbits and stuff up there.
There is a huge third floor that obviously has not ever been used because it needs to be turned into a third floor. It's basically like an attic in your home.
Yeah.
The elevator shaft goes all the way up to the third floor. So ideally, in my mind, if I live long enough, I'd like to see that third floor turned into the archives area.
Mm-hmm.
And then that would give us an opportunity to open up some of the rooms that are on the basement floor and the main floor that we're using for archive storage now, where we could put in more exhibits. You know, we have close to 40,000 archives
in
the Marion County Museum.
You might open that area to, like, people that want to do studies of
we could move genealogy there if we get the elevator working. We could also cordon off a whole section. I mean, this is we're talking the whole original building, an empty floor.
Wow.
But now, bear in mind, it's in the raw. It needs a lot of work. It probably would take another $300,000-$400,000 to do what I'd like to do. But it's not beyond the realm of possibility.
Yeah.
So, you know, all these are things that in the back of my mind I want to see done. But right now on our plate is the HVAC system and the roof.
Yeah, so you got to take one step at a time.
But it is a lot of wasted space that's not being utilized, and I'd like to see us utilize that.
Cool.
So we're going to be looking for a lot of money over the next several years. But again, if you are interested in books, please stop down to the museum or give them a call, 740-387-4255, Monday through Friday, and make arrangements to stop down.
I'm going to have to ask you for a recommendation when we're off the air of a really inexpensive book that I could give my grandkids that would tell them about Marion.
Oh, Randy Winland did a children's book a number of years ago, yes. In fact, I will see that you get one.
Well, maybe I'll come over and buy three of them.
Well,
one for each family.
I'll make sure that we. I'm sure we still have them available because they've been a very good seller over the years.
Are they for real young kids or are they for? But my kids are not that young. They're in their 12 to 16.
They would be good. Yeah, okay. They would be good. And we actually have a couple of different books that would be, that would be suitable. The one that Randy wrote that I'm thinking about would probably be good for up to like 10 years old. For a little bit older than that, then I would go with another, a little better, more comprehensive history. You know, the sad part about this is there isn't any local history being taught in the schools anymore.
No.
In fact, there's not much state or even U.S. history being
there
taught
ever has been
anymore.
Local history has been lost.
Yes, Randy Wendland used to teach a class mm-hmm. of local history to teachers in the Marion school system,
cool.
And then it was passed on, especially in the elementary grades. But I think that's long been forgotten.
Yeah.
And it's kind of sad because these kids are the ones that have to take over for us old people because we're not going to be around much longer. And unfortunately, and it's not just us and not just the Marion County Historical Society, it's historical societies in general. The median age for most historical societies is 75.
Wow. So. Well, my wife and my sister-in-law and I were sitting together yesterday. We always do on Wednesday, sitting around our living room. And my wife says, my sister-in-law said, "What's ever happened in Marion?" And I thought, holy cow, where's Fred when I need him?
A lot, yeah, absolutely a lot. And I'm a transplant. There's a lot that I don't know about Marion history. I've only been here basically since 2004.
All three of us are transplants.
So, I grew up in Southern Ohio. I was president of the Hocking County Historical Society during the bicentennial years. Yeah, I was the youngest president of the Hocking County Historical Society ever. Yeah. I was elected when I was 24 years old. So,
wow.
So I got
now
a lot of history with history in Hocking County.
Now we can do some adding and subtracting and find out how old you are.
Well, I'll tell you how old I am. I'm going to be 72 this summer.
All right,
so,
congratulations.
Yeah. But anyway, that's what's going on there. Malabar, got to throw out a quick thing there. You know, for a while we were displaced. The Malabar Farm Foundation was displaced from Malabar. We are back on the premises. I'm glad to say we worked out an agreement with the ODNR. We got both our state senator and our state representative from that area, from the Richland County area, involved and put a little pressure to bear where it needed to be. So we now have we're back on the property. We are in the what we call the Berry House, down across from the working farm, if you're familiar with the area at all. The Berry House, which used to be the old Hostel House, of course that was done away with about 3 years ago. The Hostel America, or Hostel International, wasn't getting enough business there, so they gave up their lease and it went back to the state.
I assume a hostel house is not a house that's mad at everybody, right?
No.
Okay. Well,
spelled differently.
Differently, okay.
Yeah. Very popular in Europe still. They're extremely popular in Europe.
Yeah, but they don't like anybody. So.
But anyway, the Berry House is actually the house that, it was a catalog house. It was actually the house that Louis Brumfield and his family lived in while they were building the big house. They lived there for about roughly a year while the big house was being built. So now we have quarters there. The Spinning and Weaving Guild has the downstairs floor, and the Malabar Farm Foundation have the upstairs floor. So now we have a place that we can call home again and have our board meetings and so forth. So we're back on the farm. We're going to be starting to plan some events for next year soon, so we'll have some things to talk about along those lines. But I did want to mention that we are back. And our art and artifact restoration project will start again in 2022. That was put on hold all of 2021. Yep, there he goes. I heard that sound for an awful lot of years. Those things will be starting again. Mohican. I'll get it right in a minute. Mohawk Historical Society will be closed until further notice because of the new outbreak of COVID. But again, I'll mention we did expand the museum over the past winter. So we now have three buildings that we are in. And I got to take you up to see that sometime.
Yeah, I'd like to.
When we get open. But that's the history of the Mohawk School District, which actually takes in parts of Wyandotte, Seneca, and Crawford County. So it's a pretty good-sized area.
I was just about to ask you, where is that?
Yeah, and that history goes back clear right around the turn of the about 1801, 1802. Okay. So we've got a lot of history comprised in that area, too. Wow. So I think that's all of my public service announcements today.
Since Fred said he was only going to take a couple minutes, you have a half an hour.
Yeah, why don't you talk a little bit about Tallgrass, and then we'll get into what's coming up and so forth. I didn't mean to do that.
No, that's fine.
I always like to keep people abreast of hearing your
history.
So. Now, Tallgrass Trail is open all winter, right?
Yeah, it's open year-round, just from sunrise to sunset, so, you know, that'll vary from season to season.
Now, when it gets real snowy, do you get people out there?
We get some.
Do you ever get any cross-country skiers out there?
We get a couple. We've had some people with large the snowshoes.
Oh, yeah.
I've seen a couple of those, but typically we don't get a lot of people.
Tennis rackets on their feet.
Yeah, that, I was almost about to say that. That's honestly what it does look like.
Yeah. Well, I guess let's open it up to talking about southeastern Ohio, an area that I think all three of us really love.
Absolutely. Yeah. I'm talking about cross-country skiing. There's a lot of cross-country skiing that takes place in Hockey County.
Oh, yeah, of course.
All that hill. General area, right.
You don't go uphill, though.
Well, you have to go up to go down, so yes.
I take my skis off and walk up.
I did some cross-country skiing when I was in my teens, in Hockey County.
That's a really aerobic exercise.
Well, it's extremely aerobic and something that you have to be, you know, either very, very young or you have to be very adapted to doing. Because
it's live cardio.
Oh, betcha.
I won't be doing it.
But Glenn and I talked a little bit about southeastern Ohio when I was here last month, but we didn't cover a whole lot. So I talked a lot about Ohio University and that area. And I was thinking of something that I was going to mention that day, and I forgot. When you were down there, did you ever go out to Abdella's?
Yes.
Okay.
As a matter of fact, Susie Abdella, the granddaughter, I think.
She'd have to be granddaughter.
Susie was one of my students. So.
Really? Yeah. That used to be, are you familiar with Abdella's at all?
I've heard about it, but I never went there.
Well, back in the day, back in the 60s. Very close to that, back in the 60s, that was an extremely popular place to go.
I'm sure it was.
They
served alcohol there.
The State Highway Patrol, I'm sure, did a lot of business coming out of Abdella's back in those days. But
they got their funding.
Usually anybody I run into that has any connection or history with Ohio University, I always ask them if they were a frequent customer of Abdella's.
So. Boy, and it's a long way from Athens.
It is.
If you have to drive from there to Athens... All they'd have to do is have a couple of cops out there.
That's why I say the Athens County Sheriff's Department and the Highway Patrol, I'm sure, did a lot of business.
Yeah, I'm sure they did.
I know I had to get home a couple of times.
And you didn't walk, I bet.
Oh, too far to walk.
Yeah, it's way too far.
That was before the bike trail.
Absolutely. And like I told Glenn the last time, I spent just my freshman year on campus and then transferred to the branch in Lancaster. But if it hadn't have been for the clock tower on the dorm that I happened to be staying in, I don't think I could have made it home from uptown a couple of times. That was in my drinking days. I don't do that anymore. But
James, you went to Hocking College and you went to Rio Grande.
Yes. Yep.
And was there any other down there that you went to?
No, just those two colleges and universities.
I went to six, so I thought everybody went to six, but I found out most people only go to one or two.
Rio Grande's another beautiful college. My uncle went to Rio Grande after World War II on the GI Bill.
I bet he probably knew about Bevo Francis.
Absolutely. Yeah, I can tell you the history of Bevo.
The man who saved Rio Grande.
You betcha.
I met and introduced Bevo to our audience at a basketball game.
Really?
And he was a very nice gentleman. At that time, he was getting up.
I met him once. Yeah.
And very nice. He's the first person to score 100 points, was it?
In a basketball game, in college basketball. Yeah.
Now, I think other people have done it since then, have they not?
Oh, I'm sure.
Chamberlain broken that did record. In the pros.
But you got to remember, in those days, most, like with Rio Grande, they probably only had six or seven guys on the basketball team.
Yeah.
You know, so it wasn't something that you saw very often. So.
But they were very good when he was there.
Oh,
they
absolutely.
They were definitely the underdog.
Oh, yeah, you better believe it, yeah.
I know what you did at Hocking, but what did you study at Rio Grande? Or is it Rio Grande?
You gotta call Rio Grande, and you call Rio Grande the local skip man.
It's Rio Grande down there.
It's Wildlife Fishery Conservation Management.
Oh,
so,
okay.
So, yeah, say that 10 times fast.
So they had
a wildlife program, yeah.
Yeah, that's kind of,
I didn't know that. What was interesting, I did a 2+2 program, so I graduated from Hocking, and then... a lot of my credits transfer over to Rio Grande. And so then what was really interesting about that program is the two college professors drove up to Hocking College.
Really?
Yeah.
That's
the core program there.
That's a drive.
Yeah.
Probably 20 miles.
And then all my other classes, like my extra maths and Englishes and all that, I did through Hocking. So it was cheaper and easier because, you know, Hocking is a tech school, not a university.
Right. Jimmy Rhodes started that.
Yeah. And so we were the last class, 2014, to have that program. Now, they do everything now at Rio Grande. So I only went to the actual campus only four or five times, including graduation. So I don't have a lot of experience in the whole Rio Grande area, but mainly around Hocking. So
now, when you were at school at Hocking, was Dr. Light still there?
I don't think so. No.
No. He left. No, because he was there when Jimmy Rhodes started school.
He held on for a long time.
Oh, he did, yes.
But I think he probably left in 10. When did you get out of there?
Let's see. I started in 2009 and graduated in 2012.
I think he got out around that time, 2008.
Yeah, because he was older than me when he took that job originally, and that would have been, good grief. My wife went to the first nursing program. My ex-wife went to the first LPN nursing program down there in 1970 or 71. So John had to have been...
He was getting up there.
Yeah. I'd say probably close to 80 by the time he left there.
I think that was about right.
Yeah.
Now, my son was recruited to play sports at Rio Grande.
Yeah. Rio Grande.
Anyway.
That's a river in Texas.
Yeah, I know. He was recruited. He went... It wasn't high enough level for him, But they had a pretty good athletic program for. I don't know if they still do or not.
They're probably, I think, most famous for the girls' softball.
Right.
Oh yeah.
The Red Storms. That's their mascot.
Yeah. I remember that.
So, James brought a bobcat pelt with him today.
Yeah.
Of course, the mascot for Ohio University is the Bobcats, obviously, for good reason. And I always like to remind people, you know, this is a big Ohio State University town. I'm reminded of that quite frequently.
Yeah.
Although once in a while I do see an OU shirt.
Every once in a
while. Or a jacket around. But I do have to remind people that there is another college with Ohio in the name, and we were first.
We were first, absolutely. Yeah. And
a lot sooner than Ohio State.
I went to a seminar about when we were copywriting the Bobcat Paw, and that was my job, one of my jobs. And we went around the room, and we were at OSU, and the lady said, "Let's go around the room and introduce each of you." And we went around, and she said, "I'll start. I'm from the..." She hit the so hard.
Yes, I always
fell off the table.
Yeah.
The Ohio State. So we went around the room, and Bowling Green and, you know, all the state schools were there.
Mostly MAC schools.
Yeah, they were almost all MAC schools. And I was the last one, and I said, "Well, my name is Glenn Coble, and I'm from the first Ohio University."
Good for you.
I got applause.
Did you get any applause?
Yeah, I did. But anyway, we all laughed about that. But I have great friends there. Gene Smith was a real good friend of mine. He used to be a assistant athletic director up at Eastern Michigan. Now he's athletic director at OSU. Right. I have a lot of friends that have gone through OSU. So I really have nothing against OSU.
Now, James, when you were at Hocking College, did you live on campus? Or?
I did.
Yeah.
When I was in the Hocking program, and then Rio Grande, because I was not technically a Hocking student, I was a Rio Grande student, so I was not allowed to stay on campus, so I stayed in an apartment in Nelsonville.
Oh, okay. Well, see, the reason I brought that up was because Nelsonville is where I spent a lot of my early childhood.
Okay.
When we sold our dairy in Scioto... Well, I'm going to tell you. When we sold our dairy in Scioto County in 1959, we moved to Logan. My mother came from a big family. There were seven kids in the McKinley family, four girls and three boys. And two of my mother's sisters had moved up to the Hocking and Athens County area back, well, really right before the war started. My Aunt Ann Lou moved to Logan, and my Aunt Mary Jane moved to Nelsonville, and my Aunt Katie moved to Nelsonville. And my Aunt Mary Jane was the music director, band director at Nelsonville for 38 years.
Huh.
originally just Nelsonville, and then, of course, when they built the new high school and it became Nelsonville York, she stayed on for a number of years there, too. But so summers, I would go to Nelsonville and spend the summer with my Aunt Mary Jane because she was, of course, off from school, and she and my Aunt Katie had a house up on Adams Street, you know where Adams Street was.
I don't remember that.
Of the streets up on the hill where they used to mine coal.
But
that's where I would stay in the summertime. So Nelsonville Swimming Pool, spent a lot of time there. Loved the square in Nelsonville. It's what?
It's relatively new now.
Well, it wasn't then.
No. Well, now it's a water park.
I grew up basically with a lot of the Brooks family that have Rocky boots, Rocky shoes.
Sure.
Yep.
Nice.
And then they moved down on Franklin Street, which is actually just a block over from the main square in Nelsonville. And, of course, Nelsonville is the home of the Parade of the Hills and also the Big Fiddle Contest.
Oh, the Big Fiddle Contest.
So while you were down there, did you partake of any of the activities in downtown Nelsonville?
So we were the last class that for my first year with the Paul Bunyan Festival.
Okay.
Before they moved it to Guernsey County.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I got to
At least one year.
Then they started the music fest and got to see Willie Nelson and got to see Loretta Lynn and George Jones. Mm-hmm. So, and that was pretty neat.
It always amazed me that they could attract the people that they did for the Parade of the Hills, and then, of course, later the Parade of the Hills has been there a lot longer, but then also the music festival. And a lot of people don't know this, but one of the very early Parade of the Hills that I can remember, this would have been in the, well, I'm going to say sometime in the early 60s, mid-60s. They always have a marshal, parade marshal every year. My Aunt Mary Jane was parade marshal one year. I was very proud of that. But Vanna White was parade marshal at the Parade of the Hills.
I'll be darned.
I think it was the first or second year that Wheel of Fortune was on TV.
Huh.
Yeah. And a couple other things about Nelsonville that a lot of people don't know or may or may not know. The girl that played, and I'm drawing a blank, don't remember her name. The girl that played on Sex in the City.
Yes. Jessica Sarah Parker. Yeah.
Jessica was in school in Nelsonville.
She's famous for Hocus Pocus.
Yeah. My aunt had her in school.
Class D movie she was in that really made her famous from there, and I can't remember what it was.
But Sex in the City.
That's what really turned the trick for her. Yeah,
that made her
basically
rich.
But she grew part of her formative years in Nelsonville. Then I think they moved to Cincinnati, if I remember right, when she got a little bit older. But
James, if you had to return and take a friend to the most interesting place in southeastern Ohio, where would you take them?
You know, that is a good question.
Other than out to find that bobcat.
Yeah. Like, when I was in college, the Waynes National Forest was right adjacent to Hawkins College. So a lot of times, I mean, if I had nothing to do, I'd just go out hiking way back in there.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I couldn't tell you how many times I got lost.
Oh, yeah.
But it was just so gorgeous. I mean, you felt like you were in no man's land.
Evil landscape,
but it was so neat to see all the wildlife and the local flora. I mean, just being out in the middle of nowhere.
And you can, there are trails that go out there, I assume?
So there were some that the college made because of their horse program.
Right.
But then some, it was just deer trails that I took. And
you can get lost very easily back
then. Oh, yeah.
When I was on campus, I had an anthropology professor that used to spend his summers out in the Wayne National Forest looking for Bigfoot.
Oh,
that's no lie. That's the truth.
Really? Yeah, there's been several sightings in around the Nelsonville region.
Right outside the tavern that's right there.
Well, I mean, this guy, PhD, I mean, you know, he was no slouch.
Yeah, but you can get really strange if you have enough of the tavern. Well, where would you take people if you were going to go to Logan? Where would you go?
Logan?
Yeah. I know where I'd take him.
I have an
idea. I would take him to Wayne Forest, but if I was down in that area. But
are you talking about a historical area?
Just a place that you think is the most interesting place for anybody to see in Logan.
Well, if the Bell Brothers were still alive, I'd take them to the Cameo, but...
What's the Cameo?
Oh, the Cameo used to be the most popular bar for older people in Logan.
You're sounding like a souse.
It was right across the street from the city council chambers, and that's where the second council meeting was always held, with Cameo.
I would take them to the lake there, I think.
To Lake Logan?
Yeah,
either that or...
Lake Man's Cave, one of
the... Yeah. No... If I were going to pick someplace like that, I would take them to Conkle's Hollow.
Conkle's? Oh, I love that place.
Of all
Tell
the
me
parks.
About it. I've
of,
never oh. been there.
Well, there was just a big article in the Columbus Dispatch on Sunday here just a couple weeks ago about Conkle's Hollow. I don't know how to describe it. It's like, well, for one thing, it's probably the least visited of all the state parks in the area.
That's why I don't know anything
yeah,
about
so
it.
Yeah, so it's pretty pristine.
It's actually technically owned by the Division of Preservation.
Right, yeah.
It's not part of the state park system.
Right, huh. yeah. So I think the outcroppings, the different flora, fauna.
A lot of biodiversity.
Yeah, really? Yeah. That was kind of what the article was talking about in the Columbus Dispatch, was that the other place I would probably take them would be to the Natural Bridge area, Rockbridge.
Yeah. Yes. Oh, it's so funny you talking about this. The last spring, my family and I went, well, you've probably been there. Those hills go down.
Oh, hey,
when we were going up that hill, she was huffing and puffing. I barely had, drag her out.
If you have little kids with you, you better take care of them because they can fall to their demise.
In the 60s, this wasn't really being maintained by anybody.
No?
In the early 60s when I first started going to Rockbridge. To the natural Rockbridge.
Yeah, James, Conkle's Hollow is a really, like what you were talking about, unfortunately there are a lot of people when I was down there who have accidentally fallen off.
Right.
Yeah.
No,
it's
where is it? How do I get there if I'm on 33, I'm sorry.
Well, I would say probably the best way to get there when you get, if you're coming from Lancaster on 33 going south, you're going to hit, go past Sugar Grove, come down where Rockbridge is, and I forget the state route that turns, if you're going south,
to the right.
Right. And I don't remember what that road is, but I think that'll take you right to Conkle's Hollow.
Yeah. I take usually Big Pine Road once you get in the kind of catty corners. And there's a lot of meandering. So if you got someone who gets car sick easy, just kind of go slow.
Yeah.
It's
really
beautiful.
I have a dog that gets sick.
I always recommend a state route because that way, if you don't know where you're going, there's signs, so you can't get lost. But there's a lot of great back roads I spent a lot of time on those back roads between Fairfield, Hocking, and Athens County.
There's probably
and Perry County.
There.
You know, Perry County. We can't forget Perry County either.
That's true.
Because
That's true.
You can still go down and see where the mine fire was started back in the 20s when they had the strike. There's still places in cracks in the road where there's smoke coming up from where they set the mine on fire.
Now, there is a mine that had a huge disaster out by Gloucester.
Mm-hmm. I remember.
What was the name of that mine? I can't remember it, but it was 70-some people were buried there.
I don't remember.
And and it's still burning, and they don't know if it'll ever go.
Yeah. It's the same way as the one up in Perry County.
Yeah. Now, as a naturalist, I'm not sure if you'll know the answer to this, but I was my minor in college was similar. I would say that might be karst topography down there. Is that limestone underneath all that?
Boy,
or
I don't
do you know that?
I know Virginia there is. Boy.
Because it all the hollows and all the caves that are down there imply that that's limestone under there. And if it is, there might be some beautiful caves with stalactites and stalagmites.
Yeah. I would say that there probably are.
Yeah.
I mean, just given the area in general, and what you see in Old Man's Cave and Ash Cave and places like that, I would say you probably would see quite a bit of that.
Yeah.
Now, didn't you tell me last time we were talking about this that... there's a county down there that has the least population of all of Ohio.
Well, that's Vinton County.
Vinton County.
I can see that.
Yeah, the whole county probably isn't over 20,000 people.
Yeah. Now, it's a nice county.
But it's very depraved. If you drive into MacArthur, there's not a whole lot there.
If you drive out of MacArthur and you have to go to the bathroom, you're in trouble.
Yeah.
Because you aren't going to find one for a long time.
Well, it's just, I'm not sure. I think a lot of it is because of the Wayne National Forest. It just never developed like some of the other areas.
Why is that? Why hasn't Wayne National forest developed. I mean, there are people in Athens that don't know anything about Wayne National Forest. I know about it because I was involved in a mountain bike race that went through right behind Hockey
College. And James probably know better than this, but I think because it is so dense and so unmarked.
It is unmarked.
There have been people lost in the Wayne National Forest over the years.
And it covers, what, three or four counties?
Oh, my word, yes.
Really?
Yeah.
It's that big?
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
My.
I think portions of it go clear over to Muskingum County, don't they?
I think.
Like right on the fringes of Muskingum
County. Does it go all the way down to the river?
No.
No, not that far.
Not
okay.
That.
No.
But I know it does cover Fenton and Meigs and Athens County.
Yeah.
And I think slightly it may be into Muskingum County, too, because...
Well, we're down to our last 5 minutes, but this is really fascinating. I mean, it's fascinating for me because I live down there.
I was going to tell James, too. I was in Laurelville just a couple months ago.
I like it down there.
Went down to see the Jack Pine glass studio. Have you heard of Jack Pine?
Well, I mean, I know that's a tree that Kirtland Whirlers love, but I don't
know. Isn't it the oldest tree? Doesn't it live longer than any other tree?
There's Jack Pine glass blowing. That's the reason we went down. And I hadn't been in Laurelville for years. A real good friend of mine used to run the Laurelville Bank, the Laurelville State Bank.
Okay.
And so after we finished going to Jack Pine's studio, I told my wife and my friends, I said, we're going to drive down. Well, first of all, I asked his sister was at the studio that day. I asked her, I said, is the little restaurant by the bank still in operation in Laurelville? She said, oh, yeah, that's the best place in Laurelville to eat. In fact, the only place in Laurelville. Sure. So we went down to Laurelville and had lunch down there. And it was just as good as it was 50 years ago when I used to go there. Probably not the same management, but that whole area, if you take 180 off of 23 instead of going on down 33 like you're going to Athens, right there before you, the cemetery is on the right-hand side of the road, and 180 goes off. If you take 180 and go down that road, there's a lot of great scenery down in there, too.
There are some towns down there I don't think anybody's been to
in years.
Not terribly far.
But,
yeah.
Moonville.
Oh, no, Moonville,
The old band of town.
It's got the big, the Moonville, what do they call that thing? It's supposed to be haunted that you walk back in there under the bridge.
It was an old railroad tunnel.
Yeah, that's what I was trying to think of, railroad tunnel.
Is that right?
You're dealing
up
with
in those
70-year-olds here today, so.
Well, now, how do you drive a railroad train over all those mountainous areas? I mean, it's pretty mountainous now.
They probably blasted it through like the new bypass they made.
Have you been to that Moonville tunnel?
I did when I was in college,
Did you find any spooks down there? I didn't find any, but it is spooky.
I didn't see anything, but you did kind of an eerie feeling.
Gives you an eerie feeling.
Well, my wife had a, just for extra cash, she did a route that we delivered the Messenger newspaper, and every Sunday we had to go out at midnight, and I'd ride with her, and there were towns down there that would scare me as an adult. You drive up on them at night, and there's nothing on the main street, and you look up, and the town's way up in the mountain looking down at you. And, you know, you're absolutely certain that somebody's going to come and knock on your window that'll have a claw or something.
It's kind of like New Straitsville, New Lexington,
Shawnee,
all those towns right there. They're kind of built up on the hill, right?
Yeah. And I think it is New Straitsville where the main street down below has stores on it, but there's nothing
anymore.
But there's nothing until you get up maybe half a mile to the town.
Yeah,
it's kind of scary.
Yeah. I'll throw some names out. Tell me, Islesboro.
No.
Guybersonville.
I've heard of that.
We used to call that Guybetown. That's very near Laurelville.
Okay.
Laurelville.
Coolville.
I have heard of Coolville.
Okay. Yeah. Of course, Chauncey, we talked about that earlier.
Where is the Moonshine Festival held?
Oh, that's New Straitsville.
Is it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's actually why I went to New Straitsville.
Well, before they started having a festival there, there were a couple places back off way up the hollow where you could buy moonshine.
Oh, yeah.
And the sheriff departments down there knew of it and just didn't do anything about it.
Yeah, well, one of my wife's customers that got the newspaper They sold moonshine off their front porch. Yeah. They didn't call it moonshine.
Probably. Elixir. Yeah, of course, now you know, it's a big thing. You can buy it in mason jars in Kroger.
And it's legal.
It's legal. But
it's not good as a good store.
No, absolutely not. No. Well, although, you had to be careful where you bought it from, because you could buy the stuff that would make you go blind. That's a lie.
Well, we're going to...
Very potent stuff.
I think at our Christmas party tonight, or some Christmas party that Scott's going, somebody has moonshine that they're going to mix with the
eggnog.
Well, I'll tell you what, in my travels next summer, if I happen to get down home any, and if I can make the right connections, I'll get you some genuine shine.
All right.
Not stuff that they sell at Kroger's. Yeah.
We're down to our final 30 seconds, and James is going to, are you still going to leave a little early?
Yeah.
Okay.
About a little past 11:30.
So when we come back, we'll give James a little time to talk about his bobcat pelt and
the bobcats in general. Where are they coming from?
They're coming back, aren't they, James? Yeah. All right. We'll be back in about 15 minutes.
You're listening to WWGH Radio 107.1 FM, LP, Marion, Ohio. The place for the holiday season. From 101-year-old oldest working actor in Hollywood, Norman Lloyd, reading How the Grinch Stole Christmas.
Then the Whos, young and old, would sit down to a feast. And they'd feast, and they'd feast, and they'd feast! Feast, feast, feast! They would feast on who pudding? And where who roast beast, which was something the Grinch couldn't stand in the least. And then they do something he liked least of all. Every who down in Whoville, the tall and the small, would stand close together with Christmas bells ringing. They'd stand hand in hand. And the Whos would start singing. They'd sing and they'd sing. And they'd sing, 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 sing. Ha! And the more the Grinch thought of this whole Christmas scene, the more the Grinch thought, I must stop this whole thing. Why, for 53 years I've put up with it now. I must stop this Christmas from coming. But how? Then he got an idea. An awful idea. The Grinch got a wonderful, awful idea. I know just what to do. The Grinch laughed in his throat. And he made a quick Santa Claus hat and a coat. And he chuckled and clucked. What a great Grinchy trick. With this coat and this hat, I look just like Saint Nick.
To legendary voice of Ursula from The Little Mermaid, actress, movie star Pat Carroll performing How the Grinch Stole Christmas.
It started in low, then it started to grow. But the sound wasn't sad. Why, this sound sounded merry. It couldn't be so, but it was very, very. He stared down at Whoville. The Grinch popped his eyes. Then he shook. What he saw was a shocking surprise. Every Who down in Whoville, the tall and the small, was singing without any presents at all. He hadn't stopped Christmas from coming. It came. Somehow or other, it came just the same. And the Grinch, with his Grinch feet ice cold in the snow, stood puzzling and puzzling. Could it be so? It came without ribbons. It came without tags. It came without packages, boxes, or bags. And he puzzled 3 hours till his puzzler was sore. Then the Grinch thought of something he hadn't before. Then the Grinch... Merry Christmas, he thought, doesn't come from a store.
Maybe Christmas, he thought, doesn't come from a store. Maybe Christmas perhaps means a little bit more. And what happened then? Well, in Whoville, they say that the Grinch's small heart grew 3 sizes that day. And the minute his heart didn't feel quite so tight, he whizzed with his load through the bright morning light, and he brought back the toys and the food for the feast. And he himself, the Grinch, carved the roast beast.
WWGH Radio's staff and crew would like to wish you a very happy holiday season. Programming on WWGH Radio 107.1 FM is supported by CRT Mechanicals. Address 2842 Marion Waldo Road. Telephone number 740-225-4495. Webpage crtmechanicals.com.
Hey everybody, this is Pastor Steve Whitaker from Community Christian Fellowship. I am the host of the Pastor's Spot here at the radio station. We are on live Friday mornings at 11:15. It is replayed Wednesday at 3 o'clock and also Sunday morning at 8 o'clock. Also, at 12:15 on Sunday mornings, we have the message from Community Christian Fellowship, and that plays live on Sunday morning at 12:15. Also, we'd like to let you know that we invite you and would love to have you come to the church. We are a Bible-teaching, Bible-believing church that is very, very much focused on outreach and reaching outside of the church and loving those around us. Our service times are at 10:30 on Sunday morning and Bible school hours at 9:30. We have midweek services, a lot of kids programs, and yeah, I just invite you to really come and get plugged in. We are at 209 East Water Street in Prospect, and our phone number there is 740-494-2222. If you call and leave me a message, I promise I'll get back with you. God bless everybody. Have a good day, and we'll hear you as you call in and have some questions for us on the radio, and invite you to do that all the time at 740-383-9944.
The Marion Towers Apartments are a supporter of WWGH Radio 107.1 FM. Address 400 Delaware Avenue. Phone number 740-387-9050. Programs on WWGH Radio 107.1 FM are brought to you by Williams Grass Cutters. Telephone number 740-272-0062. Website williamsgrasscutters.com. Facebook page at Williams Grass Cutters. Email w.grasscutters@gmail.com.
Adopt U.S. Kids presents What to Expect When You're Expecting a Teenager. Learning the Lingo.
GOAT, G-O-A-T, acronym, stands for Greatest of All Time. As in, spaghetti sandwiches for dinner? They're my fave. Dad, you're the GOAT.
You don't have to speak teen to be a perfect parent. Thousands of teens in foster care will love you just the same. Visit AdoptUSKids.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt U.S. Kids, and the Ad Council.
Adam Media and Adam the Computer Guy are a proud supporter of WWGH Radio, offering remote and on-site technical support, network setup, and computer troubleshooting for homes and businesses. Website pctech.biz or adamthecomputerguy.com. Telephone number 740-531-2326. Also available mobile notary services in Central and Mid-Ohio.
In the spirit of the holiday season, WWGH Radio will play one classic Christmas song every hour through Christmas. WWGH Radio wishes you and yours a very happy holiday season.
I'll be home for Christmas. You can plan on me. Please have snow and mistletoe and presents on the tree. Christmas. Thus Eve will find me where the love light gleams. I'll be home for Christmas if only in my dreams.
This is Harry Carey, and I'd like to wish Scott Spears and everyone at WWGH Radio 107.1 FM a very happy holiday season. Holy cow!
This is Scott Spears looking down on the beautiful city of Marion from the WWGH News Chopper. If you would like to ever submit a news tip or an event to the WWGH News Department, email Scott at WWGH1071.com and watch out for the chopper. And now a holiday message from Scott Spears, Charlie Evers, and the man with the golden voice, Ted Williams.
Thank goodness, I think I have the last present wrapped and under the tree.
Well, that takes too much time. Gift cards, that's the way to go.
It's the thought that counts. How much thought can you put in a gift card?
Well, I thought I would buy gift cards so I wouldn't be here wrapping presents like you at the last minute.
Happy holidays from WWGH Radio 107.1 FM.
Offbeat News and Trivia with Nate Redman can be heard every Wednesday here on WWGH Radio 107.1 FM from 4:10 to 5 p.m. Also streaming live on the internet at WWGH1071.com. Don't forget to listen.
Hello, neighbors. This is Pastor and Bible teacher Craig Heilman, inviting you to join me this Sunday and every Sunday from 11:10 a.m. to 12 noon for Study His Word Radio. And that's exactly what we do. We'll take a few moments, open up God's Word, and study it. We'll also spend some time talking about current events that relate to the church. We'll have some interviews with local people of faith. We'll answer your Bible questions. And we'll take your comments about our study. So please, join me this Sunday, every Sunday, at 11:10 a.m. right here on WWGH 107.1.
'Twas the night before wild lights, and all through the zoo, creatures were decorating just for you. With 3 million lights and displays that glow, there was much to be done before the big show. Rhinos were happily hanging the wreaths. Monkeys made cocoa and holiday treats. Penguins had ornaments perfectly placed, the highest of which were hung by Big Hank. But one thing was missing from the festivities, the shining star on top of the tree. Till Santa showed up and said with a laugh, "Looks like a job for Jama Giraffe."
The tradition continues. Wild lights at the Columbus Zoo make safe and fun holiday memories. Visit Santa and real reindeer. Plus, see the Polar Express 4D experience in the 4D theater. Now through January 2nd. Learn more at columbuszoo.org.
It's now time for WWGH News. News about people, places, and plans. Brought to you live from the WWGH Newsroom.
This is Scott Spears in the WWGH News Center. Ohio State Highway Patrol Trooper Andrew M. Shellhouse has been selected 2021 Trooper of the Year at the Marion Post. The selection of Trooper Shellhouse, age 30, is in recognition of outstanding service during 2021 at the Marion Post. Fellow officers stationed at the Marion Post chose Trooper Shellhouse based on his leadership abilities, professional ethics, courteous treatment of others, enthusiastic work attitude, and cooperation with supervisors, peers, and the public. Trooper Shellhouse joined the Highway Patrol in 2015. He has been assigned to the Marion Post throughout his career. He is originally from McCutcheonsville, Ohio, and graduated from Mohawk High School. Trooper Shellhouse served his country in the United States Army and National Guard prior to joining the Highway Patrol. Trooper Shellhouse received 3 commendation letters and has served as a field training officer twice. Other Highway Patrol awards received include the Health and Physical Fitness Award, Safe Driving Award, Educational Award, and Military Recognition Award.
The relatively warm conditions will be hanging on for dear life, and then we will settle into a pattern of just about normal temperatures for this time of the year. From the WWGH Weather Center, Thursday, rain all day, winds gusting between 25 and 50 miles per hour at times, with a high around 60, but it'll be an early high. Temperatures continuing to drop Thursday night, with rain possible, winds 15 to 30 miles per hour at times. It'll drop to the freezing point by sunrise on Friday. A very normal mid-December high of 43 for Friday is on tap for you, with rain possible. Friday night, rain likely, low of 38. Yes, more rain Saturday, high once again of 43. Rain ending, but continued cloudy conditions for Saturday night, with a low in the upper 20s. Partly cloudy.